Thursday night, 8:30. Always means our friend Howard Levitt, Canada's top employment lawyer, joins us for a half hour of employment law conversation. Howard, welcome back.
I'm always ecstatic to be here. Not just delighted, ecstatic.
That's so nice of you to say. Thank you. And, you know, I'm very excited and happy for you and your firm because you've undergone a little bit of a rebirth. You have a new name. You have a new website. So tell us about that.
Well, if you Google Levitt LLP, you will see three people who are much more attractive than I am. And thank goodness for that. And they have taken over the reins of the firm along with myself. So it's now Levitt, Shake, Chaudhry, and Swan.
That's,
and they've done very well. They deserve every bit of it.
That's amazing. Yeah. And, you know, you guys, I have to say, because I've seen your website over the years, you have the best photographer. You guys all look like models.
Exactly. You know, when I had the big ROB article written on me a couple of years ago, we had this amazing photographer. So the promotion company we hired to help us with this launch said, nah, you're not going to have the wedding photographer, or whatever, the inexpensive photographer. You know, it's like your ROB magazine article. That's the kind of photographer we want. I said, well, actually, I know him.
Oh, wow.
We brought him in at the price of a bar mitzvah wedding photographer, and he did it, and it does look, because he's done GQ. I mean, he's done New Yorker. He's done a lot of fashion photography. He's brilliant, and he did it.
Yeah, he does a great job. He does a really good job. So congratulations. The new website looks great. And but always, you know, the same quality that you are always bringing to the table with employment law. And I know you guys are really busy right now. We've actually already got people starting to call in for you. 416-872-1010. If you have any employment issues and you want to talk to Howard, he is here to take your calls, answer your questions. We will start with Avi. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, hi, good evening.
Hi, good go evening, ahead Avi. With your question.
Yeah hi, thanks for taking my call. So my question is, I used to work at a call center as a team leader out in the West End in GTA. And I was there for just under 2 years. And then there were some changes in the management, and there was a new director of operations that came in. And then suddenly I get called in, and they said that they have to let me go, and it's without cause. So I go into the office of the HR manager and the director of operations, and they say that we have to let you go. And I asked them, what is the reason? What's the reason? And they said that we don't have to give you a reason.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's
I was
true.
Very taken by it. So, and I was one of the most senior people there.
Reason. If they're alleging cause, they have to give you a reason. If they're not
okay.
alleging cause, then it doesn't mean, that doesn't matter what the reason is. If it's a good reason, a bad reason, a different reason, the amount of severance is the same. It's got nothing to do with the reason for firing you. So legally, it doesn't matter why they fired you if there's not cause. They're admitting there's not cause, which is really all you care about. So the reason doesn't matter, unless it's a reason that they don't like you because you're Israeli, or they don't like you because you're gay, or they don't like you for some reason protected by the Human Rights Code.
Right.
Then it matters, because then it's a violation of the Human Rights Code. But short of that, it doesn't matter a whit.
So you said you, let me ask you, Avi, you said you were taken aback. Is it because, like, you were upset at the fact that they let you go?
No, actually, the reason why I got taken back was because, I was the most senior person there. I had the most knowledge. I used to actually train other people that used to come in there. So, and even people that were more senior to me, they used to sometimes come to me for help. So when this new person comes in and lets me go, I was very, very shocked. You know, in a way, because I was there for just under 2 years. Then what happened was that when I was in the room, and they said that, okay, if you sign this paper now, we'll give you 3 weeks of severance. If you don't sign it, if you take it home and think about it, then we'll give you 2 weeks.
Mm.
So I was kind of like, you know, like pressured at the moment, and I was blanking out. So I was like, okay, let me just sign the paper. So I signed the paper, and I got 3 weeks of pay, basically. So my question is, do I have a case against, like, can I get more severance?
No. No, you don't. First of all, it doesn't matter that you're the best performer. It doesn't matter that you're most senior. It doesn't matter that you're training other people. It just doesn't legally matter.
Okay.
There either is cause or there isn't cause. If there isn't cause, we go into the other factors of age, position, length of service. In my textbook, Law of Dismissal in Canada, I cite over 150 factors, but there's five ones that are make most of the difference most of the time. So you're there only 2 years. How old are you?
I'm 35.
35, what do you earn a year?
Pardon me?
What did you make a year?
Oh, my! It was about $37,000.
So a car would probably give you 2 to 3 months' pay. You took 3 weeks' pay, which is terrible. But the reality is, if they said sign on this bottle, you get nothing, you'd have a good case. Maybe not 2 years later, but you'd have a good case inherently. But they didn't do that. They said take it home, think about it, speak to a lawyer, do whatever you want. And you chose.
No. They said to him, they said to him, if you sign it on the spot now, you'll get 3 weeks' pay. If you take it home and think about it, you'll get 2 weeks' pay.
Oh, then that's what I said. I misheard him. I'm sorry. So if you were not given a chance to think about it and take it home.
Right.
Here's the story. If you could prove that that's what happened, you can get around the settlement. You'll get your 2 to 3 months, which still isn't a whole lot of money. It's, $3,000 to $6,000. You've already got a third of that. So I'm not sure it's worth the fight. And the first step will be, I'm sure they will say to you, I'm sure their evidence is going to be, we told him to take all the time he needs to think about. He wanted to sign on the spot. They're not going to admit to it. So if you weren't tape recording that meeting, you're going to have trouble being believed that that's what happened. You might be believed, and then you overturn the release. But again, it's not like you're giving up $30,000. You're giving up $4,000.
Right.
So is it worth going to small claims court? Sure, why not? You've got nothing to lose. Go to small claims court, sue for the 3 months' pay, less than three weeks you've been paid. If you get a sympathetic judge, and they're more sympathetic in small claims court than anywhere else to employees, then you're going to get the extra money. And the reality is in small claims court, they generally settle along the way, so you're going to get some money just in the settlement. And if you lose, you're going to pay court costs of like $300, $400. That's it, because it's small claims court.
Right.
So you don't have a lot to lose.
Avi, they didn't happen to put that sort of threat in writing, did they?
No, there was nothing in writing in that sense. It was just
nobody
a regular, let go of letter, basically. It was nothing saying that you have to, there was nothing in writing per se.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, there's some good advice. I mean, I know, Howard, like you said, nobody would be that stupid, but I would think most employers would also not be that stupid to threaten you're going to get less if you go home and think about it.
You know what? Here's the story. They think no one's going to be able to prove that that's what happened.
Okay.
Now, you're right, but when people put things in writing, they think about it more closely. When they say things off the top, they may not think before they speak. And in any event, their presumption would be they'll just deny it. And I promise him, they will just deny it.
We've got Howard Levitt, Canada's top employment lawyer here. He will be here till the top of the hour, answering any and all employment law questions that you have. 416-872-1010. You can text us at 71010. Here's an interesting one, Howard, on our text board. Someone writes in, as an employer, can I insist my employees turn on their camera during a Zoom meeting?
Absolutely. They can. They should. Look what we're doing during Zoom meetings. We're doing our emails. We're having a chat on the side while putting ourselves on mute. We're looking at other things. We're surfing the net. We're doing, when I say we, many are doing 1,000 other things. That is one of the real problems of remote work. Even during Zoom meetings, unlike a personal meeting, people can be preoccupied invisibly in 100 other things. And even if a camera's turned on, you can't see what they're typing. You can't see where they're looking. But it's better than nothing. So, yes, you can absolutely insist that they never put themselves on mute if you want to insist on that, and they keep their cameras on and they have it at a wide angle if their camera allows for that, or supply them with a wide-angle lens. You know exactly what they're doing, going up and down and sideways.
What if people are just uncomfortable being on camera?
Tough.
All right. I'll take that for an answer.
There you go. It is the answer. It's actually legal advice. It doesn't matter. At the end of the day, an employer, if they're stuck with your being at home or if you want to be at home, an employer is able to do the things technologically and practically that puts them as close as possible in the same position as they'd be in if you were in the office. And that means having a camera on. It's like saying, I'm not comfortable being looked at. Well, if you're in the office, you're going to be looked at.
Sure, but you don't have to see yourself in it either.
I'm sorry?
You don't have, when you're at the office, you don't have to see your own reflection staring back at you.
So don't look. What can I say? You're asking me a legal question. Do they have the right to have the employees have their camera on? Yes, they do. And we can argue whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, but legally they have the right.
So that leads me to the story that we came across today that we wanted to ask you about. Microsoft appears to be patenting a new software that allows employers to monitor staffers' body language and facial expressions during virtual and in-person meetings and delivers a numeric productivity score. There is a professor at Villanova, right to privacy researcher. He says it's horrendous. Why are they monitoring people this way? What is that telling people about the relationship they should have with their employers in the workplace? What message are you sending? So the software essentially taps office computers to give managers access to an overview of company-wide activity. So what devices employees are using, how many meetings they're attending, how many hours they spend on Microsoft Office or Skype, emails subject to scrutiny, live and virtual meetings subject to monitoring for body language, facial expressions, and meeting engagement. Is any of that too far, or do you think all of that's appropriate?
All of that's entirely legal. Look, if employers are going to give people the luxury of working from home or if they're forced to be in that situation and they want to monitor productivity, because you know a lot of people won't work hard if they think no one's looking at them and then get away with it. Same people weren't working hard in the past, but now it's easier. Employers entitled to maintain productivity studies.
So you just said...
You're essentially selling yourself to your employer during the workday. That is the legal bargain.
Sure.
You get wages in return. The employer has the advantage of your work for that period of time and has the right to know if you're working or not.
So,
and this might be a little extreme, but it's not illegal.
Okay. You just said something that I wanted to ask you about. So the people who were slacking off in the office are going to be slacking off at home. The people who are hard workers in the office, do you also think they're slacking off at home? Or do you think there are some who might be still working hard from home?
I think there are some who are obviously working hard from home, but I think there are distractions at home that don't exist to the same extent in the office, even if it's the dog barking or the door ringing or letters being dropped through or the inevitable allure of the kitchen where you want to feel like eating something. There's just more potential for disturbances if you're at home. And other people being in the house, of course, unless you're single. And it's not the same thing as being in the office. Other people at home that aren't necessarily working themselves, or you're not being monitored, so you can't chit chat as long as you like. And so I think that everyone's affected a little bit. Some people are affected a lot because they can get away with it, just because they go for a walk one day with their phone in case the employer calls and they find, oh, there are no consequences. I'll go for another walk tomorrow, and then maybe a longer walk the third day. And there is going to be a massive, massive backlash from employees, and they're all called back to work in a couple of months.
What do you think? Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. What do you see the end result being? I guess people just won't have a choice. If they're called back to work, they have to go.
I think if the economy is terrible, then people will come back to work because they have no choice. If the economy jumps up to the way it was before COVID, where it was easy to find five other jobs and employers were having a shortage of employees everywhere, then I think employers are going to allow a lot more employees to work from home, because that will become the competitive market.
Sure.
But that's not the competitive market at the time they're going to be called back to work. So employees are going to be called back to work, and they're going to have to go back to work or be fired. Or an employer will say intelligently, you have a choice. You can come back to work and everything will be as before. Or if you wish to stay home, I'm going to pay you, I'm picking an arbitrary number, they can pick any number they want, 70% of what you're making at the office, your choice.
And that won't be a constructive dismissal?
No, because the employee can come back to work at full salary.
Okay, that makes sense. We're almost out of time. Let me read one other question here quickly. Someone writes, my cousin has worked for a uniform store for almost 4 years. She recently received a letter from the owner saying she'll be laid off due to a restructure. When she replied back to ask if this would be temporary or permanent, and the reason they will put on her record, they said she would not be rehired. It would be permanent. The reason would be shortage of work. What are her rights? She's an assistant store manager, has been there for almost 4 years. Should she be getting a severance package?
Well, that's a long way of saying she was terminated for 4 year employment as assistant store manager. So I need to know her earnings, the number of people she supervises, and her age. but let me guess, he's probably going to get somewhere around 4 months, or be 3 to 6 months, depending on all of those other factors.
Fantastic. Howard Levitt, it's always a pleasure. This half hour flies by. Thank you so much.
Too quickly. Thanks, Barb.
Thank you. Howard Levitt, he is Canada's top employment lawyer. The website is still Levitt LLP, but there's a new name for the firm, Levitt, Shake, Chaudhry, and Swan.